C1 PR. Number 2 A.
Take the risk of boring you. But I know that at the end of tomorrow evening, you will no more be bored about deep things which are so simple. Because the more one thinks about the very deep things which are always simple, if they are scientific, there is something about it which is spiritual. And when something is spiritual, as the touch of soul, it satisfies. And it satisfies beyond measure. But it takes that profundity and that worship. Now, another point about science, which you all know. They are considered time and time and time. And yet, it's so big. Namely, that we think we have thousands of problems. That in our lifetime, we have thousands of problems. And they worry us. And we get sick of them. Oh! But there is only one solution to all the thousands and millions of problems. And that the solution is only simple. It's the belief in a counterfeit of the seven and the four. It's the belief in 11 counterfeits, so to say. If we would tackle those 11 counterfeits, we wouldn't have to tackle the thousands of problems. If our life would be consecrated to saying, now, the real problem really which I have today, and the paramount problem which I have today is the belief in an opposite of mind, and of spirit, and of soul, and of principle, and of life, and of truth, and of love. And the real problem which I am really facing today, and the biggest problem is that I don't believe that there is a word of God, that there is no Christ, and there is no Christianity, and there is no science. If I can tackle those 11 fundamental root evils, I don't have to worry about a million problems. Because there is no problem in the world which has not its root in the seven and four counterfeits. But if we would awake to that fact really, really and truly and properly, and it takes something, anyway, for me it takes something. It takes a lot, I must say. I'm sometimes worried beyond measure about things which you would laugh about and say, how can it be? Doesn't he know more better? Quite right. But at that moment I always go back and say, what a silly ass am I. Why don't I go back to the notion that all evil is just reducible to a supposition that there is something else beside mind and spirit and soul and principle, and beside life and truth and love. And that there is not that wonderful, omniactive order of the Word, which always establishes its perfection. It's why it's always a denial that the Christ is right now at work and just lovingly and kindly wants to lift me out of the whole situation. It's because I have a denial in myself that I don't want to live the life which is, comes nearest good. And it's deep, deep down, really, all taken together, all those 10 taken together is a sense that I shouldn't work out things in a scientific way. It's a denial of science in us. So, think what our life would be, and how different it would be. That instead of trying to work out 1,000 problems, we would work out the evil. And that we would just let things go as they go. At home, in the business, in the garden, with friendships, and so on, and say, all that is just not weighing anything in the balance of God. What weighs is that I go down and handle now the root evil. Our life would be different, right from today on. Very different. Because the thousands of the million problems don't weigh one little bit in the balance of God. So our problem, number one and all, our problem, one and all, is God. It isn't my husband, it isn't my body, it isn't my friend, it isn't my business, it isn't my garden, it isn't my dog, it isn't my supply, it isn't my future. The one problem there is, if we think scientifically, is God. The facts of God, and those suggestions which will try and make me believe that these facts of God are not. And then I have everything down, boiled down to root notions. You have heard that. I have heard that. We all have heard this. We all know it. But what on earth is it that keeps us away from doing it? And that I will touch a bit later. Now, another problem of science. I still want to impress the tone what science implies, among many things. Among many things, it implies this, that we may well set our aim on understanding God in its science and affirming that God really is nothing else but a science of ideas. So the aim, the goal is set. But quite a different question is the way to it, the approach to it. Every science does not only present itself in its coherency, but also shows the scientific approach to this subject, the scientific method in which to understand the subject. And so we have always to consider these two big subjects, science and understanding. And therefore, I have asked you to ponder a little bit that article from Mrs. Eddy called Caution in the Truth. Because among many other questions which that article answers, it answers this big question that our subject has two great strains, so to say. The being which is explained and interpreted in its science, and second, the way to it, the way to understand it. You know how she points out that God knows no such thing as sin, that God is too pure to behold iniquity, the absolute standpoint. She says how God is the all in all, hence he is in himself only, in his own nature and character, and his perfect being or consciousness, he's all the life and mind there is or ever can be. Within himself is every embodiment of life and mind. He is all. You hear that absolute standpoint. You hear that which we say so often, and in which we believe, and which is right. That wonderful absolute standpoint where God just interprets himself, through himself, to himself, remaining in its absolute character and nature. But then she says, well, there is another aspect to it. The scripture also say that God pities us and pities them who fear him, that he is a very present help in trouble, that he has mercy upon us, that he guides every event of our career, that he is near to them who adore him, that he comes and pities us. See, quite a different picture of this God. And therefore, the question is, how can these two pictures be reconciled? One, that absolute picture of God, and second, that more relative picture of God. In other words, she says, be cautious in the truth. See that there is an absolute standpoint and a relative standpoint. And don't mix those two categories. That's the caution she brings up here. Because she knows very well that we are always tempted to take an absolute standpoint, to make absolute statements, and to be very, very disillusioned if those absolute statements don't do a trick. So she says, be first aware that there are two standpoints. Well, the one is the standpoint of science. The other says, you see, there must be an understanding of this science which comes to you even to the point of human understanding. When it comes to you to the point of human understanding, then it seems as God would pity us, that God would help us, that he would be a present help in trouble. So she says, to gain a temporary consciousness, a temporary consciousness of God's law is to feel in a certain finite human sense that God comes to us and pities us. Whereas she goes on and says, but the other standpoint is this, but the attainment of the understanding of his presence. See, it's no more temporary understanding. The understanding of his presence. Through what? Through the signs of God. Destroys our sense of imperfection. So here we get that wonderful link, which afterwards we will see in the first three chapters of the textbook pointed out and dealt with. That sense that first we have to approach God. Only in the measure as we approach God, we are his son. And we can take on an absolute standpoint. That unless we don't approach God through its scientific means of pure spiritual apprehension, we can speak about absolute statements from morning, noon and night, and they just won't do a thing. They just lack power and presence. So, in doing the job we have before us, let's be very clear that we have not to discard the relative standpoint, that this approach to God is at the beginning the most important step, and that unless our approach to God through the first three or four chapters of the textbook, unless that is not living and become even a temporary presence in our spiritual life, we can never touch with power and reality the absolute statement of being. In one way, she points out this again, where she says in that article, or where she makes that difference between the science of physical harmony and the science, so to say, of spiritual harmony. She says in that time when she wrote it in 1887, that the science of physical harmony as now presented to the people is, in divine light, is radical enough to promote as forcible collisions of thought as the age has strength to bear. See, she speaks about the point where the movement was at that time. She said that what we demonstrate is the science of physical harmony. But she goes on and says, that's not the end. That's all right in the beginning. That must be done in the beginning. But it is not the aim. The aim is different from the way. The goal is something different from the way. The goal is what? And she said, all right, let's another 50 years. And in another 50 years, the age will be presented with a new discovery, with a new insight, namely in this science of spiritual ideas. Well, and in less than another 50 years, his name will be magnified in the apprehension of this new subject. And the platoons of Christian Science must be thoroughly drilled in the planar manual, in the planar manual of their spiritual armament. See, whereas in the beginning, foremost in one's thought is the science of physical harmony, that point where we use mind to have power over matter, where we use mental science for our immediate needs and to meet the immediate problems. That's mental science. It's nice, it's right, it's necessary, it's fine. There is nothing to say against it. But that belongs into the practitioner's office. What is the aim of science is to culture the platoons in the planar manual of their spiritual armament. For what? Not to have the power of mind over matter, but for the spiritualization of men. Not to have the power of mind over matter as its goal, but as its beginning. And where its goal is to wean away from matter, and to wean away from materiality, it's spiritual science. But that belongs into schools. That is something which doesn't come overnight. That is something which begins with moments and goes on with years, and eternity is needed to work it out. But we have to ask ourselves, what do I want? If you want the science of physical harmony, then I think these talks are not at its right place. What we have come here, and only if we come here with that view, with that aim in mind, to put oneself through a schooling of adult spiritual education, where one is willing, patiently, and compassionately with oneself, to go through the school, patiently, slowly, step by step, for what? Not to have power over matter, but to wean away from matter with that wonderful aim which nobody can escape, spiritualization. If we go on, or if we would have as a name, the power of mind over matter, well, how long would we go on in this material world? Always power over matter, always power over matter, always power over matter, but matter is the basis. We accept as the basis matter. We accept there as the basis that there is matter and that mind is bigger. But we have a duality. And only spirit comes in and says, you must solve that duality. And so the finer aim of life. And the inescapable aim of life is to look out to spiritualize men, to wean away from materiality, but gently, slowly, and patiently, but scientifically. So this article, which she must have felt to tell the people, to tell the pupil, be cautious. You can't just go into the subject of metaphysics without being well aware what you're going into, what means you are using, and to what aim you are driving at. And so she says, be cautious. Absolute statements are powerless. They are impractical. They are not living. They are words. Unless, she says, you have grown to it. You have approached to it. So that whole article goes that says you have to approach to that standard. Perhaps I read you one or the other. Very nice, she says, of these men and women, of these mice, men and women, they will rejoice in the small understanding they have already gained of the wholeness of deity, of the small understanding they already have of the allness of deity. The aim is quite clear, it's always the allness. But the way is gentle, is satisfied with the little one knows, and work gradually and gently up towards the thought divine. I will come back to this touch of gently working, gradually working up to the thought divine. She says, everyone should be encouraged not to accept any personal opinion on so great a matter. So let's come together and reason together. And don't take what I say as granted, and that's that. And if I say it, well, it might be right, so let's believe it. Let's come together and reason together. Challenge me. Challenge me in your thought. Don't challenge me in thousands of letters which you write me. This doesn't do a thing, because I'm not going to be challenged. But challenge me in your thought. Lovingly, please, if you can, but challenge it. Everyone should be encouraged not to accept any personal opinion on so great a matter. Because no one of us is big enough and master enough and competent enough to say, that's that. Let's be seekers. And that's big to be a seeker. That's big. Because if one seeks and is earnest in seeking, that seeking develops. And if that seeking develops, it becomes definite. And if that seeking becomes definite to us, becomes new attitude to us, and we become scientific. And if we become scientific in that seeking, it will be of the nature of life, namely of uncovering and discovering new truths, the newness of principle, of deeper principle, and we become scientists in the true sense. And that's lovely. So she says that, and says, but to seek the divine signs of this question of truth by following upward individual convictions, undisturbed, by the frightened sense of any need, of attempting to solve every life problem in a single day. There's a beautiful touch in it, which we'll see tomorrow in prayer, which says, don't try to solve your life problems tomorrow. All your life problems tomorrow. Don't be discouraged if you can't do them. What we are engaged in is to find the principle of being. And as we find the principle of being, the kingdom of heaven, all things will be added unto us in the right way. And in a way we haven't thought it of. So, again, she would say, that's your caution in the truth. Be so cautious that you are willing to go gently your individual way, our individual way, undisturbed by anybody and by any problem. Do we have that love? We have that love, becomes definite to us. And she says, be cautious. Says, don't have as your aim the signs of physical harmony. That's the problem that belongs to the practitioner's office, and it's necessary and it's important. But be cautious that that is not the alpha and omega of metaphysics. The aim of metaphysics is the science of spiritual harmony, and it means spiritualization. Well, these are a few points on science, which I would love you to think about it, and think about it. They may be old, but you know we always need the Benjamin in us, the renewal of affection. There is nothing bigger than God. So why not renew our admiration for God? There is nothing more exact about God than the science of God. So why don't we renew our affection every day for the science of God? What it means, what it does, what it accomplishes, what it demands, question all that.